In the studio with me, I have Curtis Wackerly. He's the editor of the Aspen Daily News, and I have Rick Carroll, who is the managing editor of the Aspen Times. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So you guys have been doing a lot of coverage of the Ideas Festival. There's a lot of big people, big names, and big ideas that are coming out of that. Curtis, I know you've done a few stories about when it was Spotlight Health session last weekend and what the healthcare bill is doing through winding through and what policy makers are thinking.
I was pretty excited because this is Thursday of last week, which of course is the day that, Senate Republicans finally unveil the secret healthcare bill. And it just so happened that Kathleen Sebelius was giving a talk, you know, that had been on the schedule probably for weeks. But just happened to be that day that she was being interviewed by Judy Woodruff of the PBS NewsHour. And so I said, well, this is, you know, this will be interesting to go hear Obama's Health and Human Services Secretary on this particular day. And then what it turned, you know, Tom Price was there 3 days later.
Right.
Who's Trump's Health and Human Services Secretary. So
I covered that too, right?
Yeah, I did. I covered both of them. I thought that was just a great, you know, a great contrast and very, very topical and newsworthy. You know, it's been harder this week. I feel like I've just been busier, and it's harder to get out there. And because, you know, we still have it's sort of a tough balance. Like, how much do you get into the Ideas Fest versus local news as the local newspaper? And of course, it is local news, but
it is. Even though it's big, you know, it's big national stuff. I mean, did you cover it, or was it somebody else from?
We had Scott Kahn in there on Sunday when Price and the leader of Planned Parenthood was there.
Yeah. Right, that was a good story.
Yeah, but that is always a challenge. You know, how much do local readers care about Aspen Ideas? And I think Curtis is right. You try to find that right balance, but it's also nice, selfishly as a reporter in town, to kind of break away from the bowels of City Hall or whatever, and or the courthouse or whatever, and sit in on something else. It's 1 week a year.
Yeah, it's a wonderful event. If you just walking around the grounds, you know, it's just like college campus on steroids.
For sure. Well, and it puts you in front of people you would not normally be in front of that you would cover. So, what was the headline that you had the other day? Rick, on
the one. Have you lied this week?
Well, that one too. We aired that one live. The Aspen Ideas American Losing World Popularity Contest.
Right.
What was that talk about?
That was the president of the Pew Research Center. Pew just came out with like a 100-plus page report on or survey of 37 countries. 40,000 people getting their takes on the U.S. And their level of confidence in this country and the administration that's leading it. And so, you know, you sit in the seminar for an hour and they crunch all the numbers. And then I went back and read as much of the report as I could on deadline. But it was interesting. You know, I mean, it's surveys are surveys. They didn't mean much leading up to the presidential contest, as we all learned, but they can be revealing as well.
I've definitely felt that looking over the program this year and the schedule, of course, there's, I don't know what, like 50 to 100 events a day, something in there. And a lot of the topics are reflective of there's like this civic crisis going on and how do we speak to each other again. And you know, I went to one. I sat in on part of one session that was, "Can democracy survive the 21st century?" which was really interesting.
Did they say it could?
These guys weren't so sure. I'll be perfectly honest with you. These were some pretty high level academic type thinkers. You know, like former dean of Columbia, you know, political science professor. One of the takeaways I got was that if there's not just a continued raise in the standard of living as we've become accustomed to over the last 70 years, then we might have problems.
Is there anything we can do to fix that? Is it our job as journalists to do something? Did they mention it all the time?
That's a pretty big responsibility there.
Well, somebody said something, I can't remember who it was, but they said it's much easier to irritate than to influence. And, that boils it down. I think that speaks to the leader of our country all the way down to talk show radio hosts and newspaper columnists and reporters. It's so easy to just throw barbs and irritate people, but to really put some thought into it and influence people to maybe change their mind, that's not so easy, and it takes work.
It does. And that's, I was at a panel on Wednesday night at the Jerome, which is a panel of journalists, and Joshua Johnson, who's the host of 1A, was talking about how, you know, Google, Facebook, those are providers of information. And as a journalist and as a radio host, but mostly foremost a journalist, he thinks his job is to not just inform, but to have insight.
Analyze
and have insight on that information. Mm-hmm. And so and that does take time if you're going to put everything in context. And so, Rick, you covered the afternoon conversation, which is a three-hour...
3 hour plus.
Right, 3 hour plus. Right, you get a little bonus there at the end.
That is a marathon, man, to make it through that whole thing.
Right.
Yeah, but we did get to see the Preservation Hall band out of New Orleans come out at the end.
I saw that.
So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. And that was in honor of Walter Isaacson, the CEO of mm-hmm. the Institute, and kind of the brains behind this festival. But there, I know there was some journalists that were on that panel, Rick, that spoke to a number of things, but was there a takeaway? Was there any headline that came out of that as far as journalism and
that's
covering
good.
The administration?
That's a good question. I think that one of the things, I don't know if this isn't really new or anything, but the left or the East and West Coast media has really been detached from Middle America, and you cannot discard what people in Ohio and Kentucky are going through just because it's not happening in Los Angeles or New York. And that's the result we saw in November. And Katie Couric even asked them, she goes, between your family, colleagues, and whatever, out of 20 of them, how many of them voted for Trump? Jeffrey Goldberg, the editor of The Atlantic, said zero. But then when you got to the head of MSNBC and Wall Street Journal, both... which are heavily involved in business reporting and finances, they said more than you think. So, you know, there are a lot of people also who voted for Trump who want to see the economy pick up a lot more steam and are favoring deregulation and so on. And so and another person made a good point that with the editor of the USA Today, while the national media has fallen out of favor with a lot of people, local media still has a lot of power, and I don't say this to be self-gratuitous or anything, but it's true. You know, when reporters are involved in their communities and they have kids going to the schools they cover, or they have, you know, friends who are looking for housing in this town or whatever, we see it and we experience it. And whereas the national media might not be experiencing what these people in Kentucky and Ohio are experiencing.
Well, when they do cover it, and, you know, if you read the New York Times, they have plenty of stories, you know, that are byline from the heartland, but oftentimes it's like a science project, like going, you know, studying this.
Sociology experience.
Yes, sociology. Yeah. That's the phrase. You know, they're going and studying these, you know, this other culture.
Right.
It has that tone to it sometimes.
What other panels have stuck out for you guys as covering the Ideas Festival?
I interviewed John Lovett, who's a host of Pod Save America. They're doing a live taping at the Hotel Jerome Friday night that I'm hoping to catch. I think that's sort of an interesting, you know, media phenomenon in a way. And
yeah.
Just the way podcasts are taking off.
Right. He was just in the APR studios. He's mm-hmm. We'll have an interview with him next week. I didn't realize that he was the producer of The Newsroom. I didn't know that.
Hmm.
I mean, besides being mm-hmm. a screenwriter and the speechwriter for Obama and Hillary, mm-hmm. you know, now he's got this podcast. In local news, coming out of the Ideas mm-hmm. Fest, only an Aspen story about how this young girl drove her car into the pond in front of the Dorr-Hosier Center, which I think they tried to not really let be headlines, but of course we found the headline, and the Aspen Times followed up with it, and This young girl backed her car into the pond and then decided to leave it, right? And then gave erroneous report first that somebody had stolen the car, and then she decided to fess up, and she said that she was going to be embarrassed if she had told the truth.
Yeah. I think she wanted to go get one of those grass-fed hot dogs.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean,
which is, I think, is the best thing about the Ideas Fest.
It is.
Those hot dogs
are absolutely
delicious.
You know?
Well, maybe if the city's million-dollar project to have a multimodal transportation laboratory going on in Aspen, if that is getting off the ground next summer, there'll be self-driving cars going around everywhere, and they will prevent people from doing stupid things like that.
Right. We don't know much about what they're going to do, but it's the mayor's idea, Steve Scadron, to do this experiment next May and June where they're just trying to get fewer cars on cars off the road, and they're going to do it through self-driving cars, maybe a car or a moped sharing program, and narrow some streets and even close off some streets.
I mean, it sounds like they're just trying to throw anything possible at the wall and see what sticks in terms of all these like next generation sort of new forms of on-demand shared transit type applications.
Right.
And see if any of it works. I think we're skeptical. I mean, does it get cars off the road? Does it get drivers off the road?
I don't understand the concept of carless drivers if you try to reduce traffic. I mean, I don't know what that is.
Well, because theoretically, you know, you have a car, you drive it to work, and then it just sits there all day doing nothing. And if you had cars that were just constantly moving around and picking you up and dropping you off, it could somehow reduce traffic volume.
I could see that.
The general
I think
theory.
The city could just put a permanent moratorium on construction and we wouldn't have a traffic problem.
Well, that's true.
And that's...
Put a moratorium on itself then.
Right. Because, and this is nothing new, but there's so much traffic comes in here with the construction workers, and that's just an unavoidable fact, you know? And when Independence Pass opens... 6 months or whatever year.
We're a through town, right? Yeah. Like how much of that traffic is just kind of passing through?
Right. You know, I mean, we've all covered this issue for a long time. And that, what you just brought up, Rick, is not something that I hear as part of the conversation. Like, how do we get the construction trucks off the road? What's the solution? Where can we put lock boxes with tools on each job site and then have a shuttle that drives them around? Or, you know, I don't know, but there's not a lot of conversation about it. Whenever I've been at a city council meeting, a county commissioner meeting, or a elected officials transportation committee meeting. But that is the big issue. Now, of course, the elected official transportation committee, I know you didn't cover it, Rick. I know it was Jason Auslander, but, you know, they made it pretty clear that we are just putting the entrance to Aspen in the cut
no
and cover.
Lane. Right.
No four lane. Through the moral open space.
It would have been nice to say that before they spent $500,000 studying whether or not to build a four lane.
Now, of course, they haven't checked with the voters in a couple decades to see where the temperature is of people now as opposed to 20 years ago. And there's been 37 votes regardless anyway on this issue. So,
well, maybe it's time for another highly unscientific poll at the Aspen Times.
Yeah, we should do that for sure.
Let's see what the letter to the editor writers think.
Right. Rick, you had going back to the Ideas Fest, you had a pretty significant length Q&A with Walter Isaacson, the founder of the Institute of the Ideas Festival and CEO of the Institute. And he, you know, we were talking about the timely headlines that come out of this festival sometimes. And they usually time it right when the Supreme Court's making decisions and, you know, other news is happening. And when you asked the question about, like, you know, what's been the big news that's coming out of here, I wasn't surprised, but it kind of made me chuckle about the whole Loretta Lynch saga last year. So can you give
that,
us...
That was just a year ago.
Yeah, that was just a year ago.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah. So he was saying that was one of the most significant things that has come out, at least during the Ideas Festival.
Yeah.
Right?
Which
was what?
News, not ideas.
Right. News.
But I think the security forum actually is on the same footing as the Ideas Festival. Especially in recent years, it seemed to have a... Now, with the healthcare and everything, that was, you can't ask for
that. That was just serendipitous. Kinda,
yeah, you know? right. But the Security Forum, just with the state of events the last however many years.
Yeah, I mean Comey was just here last summer.
Yeah, Comey was here. John Brennan, CIA, was here. And so I thought one of the more interesting ideas festival news events was, I'm not sure how much news came out of it, but just the fact that John McCain and the Dalai Lama met in a home in the West End.
Right.
That's right.
Would have loved to have been a fly on that wall.
No kidding.
What did they talk about?
It was probably David Koch's house, I'm thinking.
Yeah, maybe, you know? So. Yeah.
Yeah. I know you had a big fundraiser here this week with everybody in town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a private one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But going back to the Loretta Lynch thing, mm-hmm. that didn't she had just left here when she went to that airport in Phoenix?
She'd been in Phoenix, okay. Met Clinton on the tarmac or runway or whatever,
then
flew here.
Okay.
Yeah, that was in the Greenwald Pavilion, and that was discussed.
Because the story was, you know, it was a national news story. It was like leading the New York Times, like Loretta Lynch has this meeting with Bill Clinton, and her next public appearance just happened to be being interviewed at the Aspen Ideas Festival by, was it Jonathan Capehart from...
It wasn't an audience initiated question.
The interviewer to his credit, the first question was about
I thought it was Walter. It wasn't.
I don't think so.
Okay. I have to go back and look.
Yeah.
But what? And do you remember how she responded? Did you guys cover that? Remember?
Yeah, we covered it.
I covered it.
What was her response?
I can't remember. You know that nothing improper happened, and she was shocked that the former president decided to board her aircraft this is right before Comey came out and said they weren't going to press charges or indict Clinton over the email stuff. So it was a very highly charged moment. Mm-hmm. If you remember, people said this is ridiculous. How can she be having this meeting with the candidate's husband? You know, this stinks to high heaven.
Yeah. There was also the time when John McCain was here, Senator McCain, just a couple of weeks after Trump ridiculed him for his
for
service.
Being, yeah, right, for being
captured.
Caught?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, ideas in the forum, they seem to have a knack for staging these events when there's a lot of news going on, but maybe it'd be that way any time of the year. It just seems
maybe.
Like that.
Right.
So.
Well, they just have so many people. It's right. bound to make news.
Yeah. Did they, in the afternoon of conversation, did they speak at all about the travel ban ruling? I mean, because that's the only news that really could come out of the Supreme Court during this session. It wasn't really a headline.
I don't recall. That it wasn't given much, if any, lip
right.
service that I know of.
Right.
Yeah.
What was your biggest takeaway with your time with Walter and that interview?
Yeah, I've found him to be a very thoughtful man, very, very articulate. I like the fact that he speaks slowly as a reporter, but just somebody who takes on these bears of a subject and turns them into, you know, biographies. I'm sure he has his own research team and everything, but he's, without pandering or anything, I just find him to be a very interesting humanitarian and he's done a lot of good for the festival and the Institute, and look forward to see who replaces him. I mean, who could that be? I mean, there's been some chatter that, you know, the maybe it's time to bring a woman at the head or some diversity.
Related to that, you wrote a story, Rick, about the public events that the Ideas Festival now has.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of credited to Walter Isaacson as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was the upshot of that story?
The Institute at one time was perceived and as a very insular group. You know, you couldn't really penetrate it. And and now it's opened it up more. You know, I think the Ideas Festival, of course, they have meetings and panel discussions where the public can't make it, but like this year they have a $99 millennial pass. That's cheaper than a show at the Belly Up.
Right.
Sure. Now, if you're a millennial, what do you want to do? It's your choice, but I'm just saying there are, then they have a lot more public events.
Yeah, there's almost 100 of them.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know? And we're so ticketed at like $15, $25.
Yeah, and so that's obviously something we all should hope they continue. But actually, when you go there, and it's not that you are starstruck or anything like that, but just to sit down and listen, there's some smart people expressing interesting thoughts, and I wish everyone in town got a chance to go there just to see for themselves what it's like.
But at least through your coverage and Aspen Public Radio's live broadcasting, we can give some of that a taste of it to the public.
Yeah. Live broadcasting has been great.
Thanks.
I've enjoyed that.
Yeah, we got a lot more coming between now and 4th of July.
And it is a very unique time in town.
It like is.
It's a different kind of buzz in the air when the Ideas Festival is going on.
Absolutely.
And the point about the public events they're doing at the Jerome and the Limelight, they're spreading the footprint out from just that campus, which I think really engages the rest of the town, or tries to.
Absolutely. Good. All right. Anything else we should talk about?
I think we've gone on long enough, haven't we?
Yeah. I have via Skype from the Glenwood Post-Independent's offices in Glenwood, Carla Jean Whitley. She is the arts and entertainment editor there. Thank you for taking the time.
Always glad to.
You had a piece about City Market being in Carbondale, being, I guess, slowed down once again, the plans to build a new one. Why do they keep asking for an extension?
Well, this time it is really because the Kroger, which is, as the real estate manager described it, essentially his bank, is slowing the project down, and so they've asked for. It's got to raise some questions. It's a 90-day delay, and it's an sort of arbitrary mark. But in order to keep some pressure on the company, they're limiting the length of the extension. And it's really a big deal because City Market is Carbondale's biggest source of sales tax revenue. Right. And so this would be a massive project that could have a serious effect on the community. So seeing it delayed, it's something that we definitely want to keep an eye on, because that can make a real difference in the day-to-day lives of the people who live there.
What does 90 days do for Kroger? And for the rep, whoever is the project manager, whoever went in front of the town trustees?
Yeah, it essentially gives them time to try and figure out the finances of the project. So that's sort of where the squeeze is. In the past, it seems that they've had more access to funds for this type of project than they do right now. And with a lean profit on a project, they're saying that it is really difficult to get companies to join in because there's so many construction opportunities. So it really comes down to finances. Mm-hmm. And as the project is delayed, that could affect the bids that the project manager has already received for the project. So it could become increasingly complex.
Yeah, it worries me, and I would think, I don't know if the town trustees expressed any concern, but if there's any question about finances, what happens where, people who have been here long enough to remember when Whole Foods was just a hole in the ground, and that really was detrimental to Willits and that town center and the Basalt area, and man, we'd hate to see, them start a project and then all of a sudden it just gets put on hold in case there's another recession or the boom and bust cycle becomes the bust part.
Yeah, well, and the trustees who we've spoken to have said that they are still supportive of the project and really want to figure out how to make it happen. But to your point, it's a complicated thing that could have a number of ramifications. So, on the surface, it looks like, okay, a grocery store, but these businesses are a big deal to our communities.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see what happens in the next 3 months.
I guess so.
Are they scheduled to come back before that 90-day period ends?
I don't know what they are currently scheduled for.
Okay.
So I know that they will revisit it by that 90-day period.
Got it. Okay. Let's move on to education. The Glenwood Post-Independent had a story about the Roaring Fork School District and some of the teachers who have been fallen victim to what is surprisingly interesting that they have fallen victim, since we have they're expanding the number of schools in that district. And you had one anecdotal story about one teacher who's kind of left out in the cold here. Can you give us a rundown of what the deal is there?
Sure. So they are, the Roaring Fork School District is in the process of finishing construction on Riverview School, which will be a kindergarten through eighth grade school, if I remember correctly. And in the midst of all of this, they've also had some teachers that have been reassigned or not reassigned. Because of course there's a shift in where teacher or where students are enrolled. So that changes the needs for teachers at different schools. Now, one of the issues here is that they have agreed to put displaced teachers, those with three or more consecutive years in the district, and newer teachers who are on probationary status, into a priority hiring pool for Riverview or any other positions in the district. But there is also, you know, of course, the question of what a teacher wants, too. And so they are exploring, you know, are we going to have jobs? And if a position isn't filled by an applicant in the priority hiring pool, then it's opened up to other internal and external applicants. So they are guaranteed to receive an interview for what they apply for. But yeah, it's, there's a lot of stuff up in the air for many of these teachers about where they will be next year, or if they will be in the district.
Right. Well, it, you know, it seems like the district's doing what it can to accommodate. But you know, whenever there's change, you know, there's, so there are casualties, I think, in the process. So
yeah, I guess, I think that's common.
Right.
And stressful.
Right, for sure. And it looks like there might be some stress at Colorado Mountain College as well. I know it's a complicated issue when it comes to all the tax laws that are in the state, Gallagher and Tabor and all that stuff, and we won't bore the listener with all that. However, they are considering a tax increase that voters would have to weigh in on, and I don't know if that would be this fall or further down the road. What does your reporting suggest? Or so, John Stroud's reporting, right?
Yes, John Stroud wrote the story, and of course, if you want to dig into the nitty gritty a bit more, you can always go to our website to find that. But it is a complicated issue, as you said, because of the changes in population in different areas of the state, and that affects how much money CMC is receiving. So the trustees are considering it, whether they should put forward a ballot question about the taxes. This would allow the district to adjust its mill levy as a way to maintain revenues as they are. And it's not exactly a tax increase. It's a little bit more complicated than that. But people in other counties within the district have said that in the past, they've seen measures fail because of the perception that it is strictly a tax increase. So they have to determine here pretty quickly whether they're going to put that forward for on a ballot this year or if they're going to table it for later. If they're going to do it this year, they've got to revisit that in mid-July and set the ballot language by September. So we'll know this relatively quickly. But it is a real financial issue that our local college must consider.
Right. And I think the local media, we have, there's lots of media in this valley, and I don't think any of us do a very good job of covering CMC and putting a lot of scrutiny on that institution. So as financial implications come down the pike and we may be considered a tax increase, I think it would be wise for all media outlets to look at the finances pretty closely. Now, I'm not suggesting that they're doing anything wrong, but I think whenever we're talking about tax increases, there ought to be some good investigative reporting. So it's a challenge to all of us, I suppose, to do that.
Right. It's important for us as media, but also as residents of this area, to understand where the money is being spent.
Right.
And there's accountability there.
You know, the Global Post Independent has been doing a series of community meetings. You just did the second one, and it was around mental health. Why don't you give us a recap, a briefing of what the GPI is doing in terms of this community outreach, and then how it relates to this bigger community issue?
Of course. So we are holding these quarterly community roundtables at the Glenwood Springs branch of the Garfield County Library. And each of these meetings focuses on a specific subject and includes a panel of local experts. The most recent one was about mental health needs. And some of the things that came up in that conversation were the need for preventative efforts, a sustainable detox center, and more psychiatric beds. Of course, we know that there are a number of complicated issues related to mental health. And in a valley like ours, you know, we've got such an interesting and dynamic population, and we need to be able to serve that. So mental health is a top priority for a lot of people, and it affects so many areas from, you know, our individual lives, but also it shows up in the criminal justice system. In Colorado, they spend about $93 million on mental health treatment a year in the criminal justice system. So looking at preventative measures can help not only with individual lives, but also it has financial benefit for all of us.
It's a huge issue on every, mm-hmm. I think, every front of our community, whether it's law enforcement mm-hmm. or it's the hospitals. Mm-hmm. Are just yeah. our community, just everyday life of dealing with people who are mentally ill on the street, suicide, all of that, all of it is all wrapped together.
And these issues touch so many of us, whether it is you as an individual, and for a lot of us, it is us as an individual, or, you know, it's people who you love, it's people having to go to the emergency room because we don't have a detox center, and that's the only place they have to go. Things like that have really a direct effect on our communities.